Now it's time for a brand new segment here on News and Notes. Every Thursday, about this time, we're going to do a roundup of the week's top medical stories. Modern science is changing so much, so fast, it's hard to keep up. Here to help us is Dr. Ivan Walks, former chief health officer for the District of Columbia. Dr. Walks, always good to have you on board. Nice to talk to you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Let's start with this on this new segment of ours. Let's talk about antidepressants. The Food and Drug Administration is now saying that warnings on antidepressant drugs should include risks of suicidal behavior in adults ages 18 to 24. So what happens, doctor, when someone takes an antidepressant?
Well, when people are depressed, one of the symptoms of depression is what's called anergy. People don't have any energy, they don't have any initiative to do anything, including to get up and try to harm themselves. They just kind of sit. When you begin to take antidepressants, and what's really important for us to focus on is even this warning talks about the beginning of the use, the early use of antidepressants, that first 1 to 2 months. Antidepressants are not aspirin. They're not going to work in 20 or 30 minutes. They're going to work over a several-week period to begin to show effect. During that time, people can become activated, begin to move more, or become agitated, become irritable. And so what this warning is about is watching people as they are beginning to take antidepressants to see if as they begin to become activated or maybe even agitated, those thoughts run to suicide or run to harming themselves.
Now, antidepressants have been around for a long time and so have warnings. But why are we just hearing about this warning at this time?
Well, this we kind of heard about antidepressants in a lot of different ways many years ago. We heard about them, some of the older antidepressants having impact on heart function, and so we had to be careful about their use at certain levels in certain age groups. Then as children began to be prescribed antidepressants, we began to hear about this particular issue, which is when you give children antidepressants, you may see an increase in the risk of the kids harming themselves or trying to take their lives. This particular warning now has to do with that age group of 18 to 24 in the young adult population to say, even in that population, we should look for this increase. And if you think about it, as a parent, you figure when your kids get to be 18 to 24, you can kind of stop watching them as much because they're young adults. So a warning like this is actually helpful to say, even though this may be a young adult, during, again, these early times, this 1 to 2 months of beginning to use antidepressants, we should look for this.
Now, how concerned then should we be with the antidepressant prescription drugs that are pushed at us so hard on television? And should, do you think, this warning be included in those commercials as well?
Let me say that the most dangerous thing about depression is not antidepressants. It's depression. And the nature of depression itself is that people feel hopeless and helpless, that their lives are not worth living. And to the extreme, they may feel that taking their life is their only chance to stop the discomfort and the abject sorrow that they're feeling. So let's be clear that depression is the number one danger. So letting people know that there is help, that there are medications that can help, that talk therapy and the combination of helping people to focus on what their issues are and the chemical treatment with these medications is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful opportunity we have. Having said that, all kinds of medical interventions are done best with people who know how to use them. So when you see a commercial, you don't run out and say, give me this drug. You run out and say, let me talk to my doctor and see if this is the right drug for me.
Well, let's talk about something else in addition to antidepressants. And it's, you might say it's the flipping of the script, in a sense. Stimulants, Dr. Walk. Coffee. The bean usually gets a pretty bad rap, but scientists apparently are finding that type 2 diabetes and some cancer can be prevented by drinking coffee. If that's true, what exactly did they find?
Well, what they found is that when you drink coffee, whether it's decaffeinated or not, they have some preliminary work that shows it can help ward off type 2 diabetes. Now, what is that? Type 2 diabetes is the kind of diabetes you get because you don't act right, because you're eating stuff that's not good for you, because your weight isn't what it should be, because you're not kind of, this is kind of the lifestyle diabetes. So what we're getting now is, here's another part of the lifestyle, the coffee drinking lifestyle, that may actually be helpful with this particular piece. Through some of the chemicals in the coffee, it may help the way that food moves through your system so that certain things move through more quickly, certain things don't get absorbed as well, and so your risk may be decreased. But that's not the whole story.
Now, I don't drink coffee. I never have, just don't like the taste of it. But should I be drinking it because of this?
Well, you and I are in the same boat, and we should not run out and start drinking coffee, because when you get the whole message, you find that it may help cut down type 2 diabetes, but it may help increase chances of getting leukemia. So children, definitely, pregnant women, folks who may be at risk for other types of things. And that's, again, it's important to get the whole story. Yes, it may help with type 2 diabetes, but it may also be bad in some other folks with some other kinds of risk factors.
So kids shouldn't be doing parents shouldn't be doing what my grandmother did with me as a youngster, give me some coffee, put some milk and sugar in it, and get me weaned onto it, so to speak. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, see, you must have been tall, because they told me that coffee would stunt my growth, and I'm short, so they never gave me any.
Talking about stimulants, though, doctor, what about tea? Explain this to me also in the context of what we are discussing. First of all, is tea a stimulant or a depressant?
Well, there are about a gazillion different types of tea. And so you've got your morning tea, you've got your evening tea. It depends on what's in the tea. So that's not one that I can give you a quick, easy answer to.
Would you know whether or not, though, in terms of talking about tea, that some of these factors that have been associated with coffee are also associated with certain kinds of teas?
Well, what we've been this with this particular story, they're talking about the coffee and some particular factors in the coffee. If you broaden the discussion to coffee and tea, then there are certain kinds of teas that do have the same kind of antioxidant protection that they're talking about with coffee in this particular study, as well as teas that do other kinds of things with respect to blood pressure. So you've got a lot of different kinds of teas marketed to do a lot of different kinds of things.
Okay. Another topic, Dr. Walks. Researchers at the Salk Institute in San Diego gave mice a drug that increases cellular metabolism, which is what happens when you exercise. They also fed the mice a high-fat and high-calorie diet, and the mice did not gain weight, apparently. Sounds pretty promising. So what's wrong with the pill as the solution to a weight problem?
Well, this is my favorite. This is my something-for-nothing story. We're going to eat anything we want, all of the bad foods, and sit down and do nothing, and then we're going to take a pill, and that's going to work. Luckily, this is reported as very, very preliminary, and it's only focused on mice and on certain kinds of mice at the moment. I think that there's a real danger here, because if you, in fact, do eat a high-fat diet and you rev up the body at the cellular metabolism level, which is what this study purports to do, one of the dangers is, what about all the other benefits of actually getting up and moving your body, moving your arms and legs and carrying your own weight around, stretching your muscles? Many people who are not active can throw their back out, bending over to pick up a piece of paper because they're not used to stretching and they're not used to bending. So I'm very concerned about this for the normal person to say, hey, I can dump my exercise and I can get a pill.
Now, there are already, Dr. Walks, pills that are being advertised on television, daytime television especially, where you can do nothing and drop a couple of pills and supposedly lose weight. How does that differ, those claims differ from what this claim?
I think one of the things that I enjoyed about this particular story is that they describe this kind of pill as the holy grail of the obesity fight. A lot of things are on the market to help people lose weight. And keep in mind that there are many people who try to eat well, who exercise a lot, and still have a huge weight problem. And so these kinds of developments are wonderful because they can help supplement a good diet and exercise program, and these folks can get some real benefit. So I don't want to say that I just don't like this whole area. This is a very important area of research, and it'll help a lot of people who are doing the right things already but still need help.
You know, the power of the pill, that's a segment that we can have, and we probably will have with you in the near future, because pills are being used in so many areas. But as we close this particular segment today, Dr. Walks, in less than a minute or so, give me a sense of whether or not you feel, as a practitioner, that we are moving too close to being reliant on pills to handle our medical problems.
I think that when we begin to start looking at what we can do as individual persons, how can I live a healthy lifestyle? How can I do everything in my power to maintain this wonderful vehicle, this human body? And then we look for all the ways that medicine can help us. Then let's look at everything. Let's find everything we can to help us be healthier and help us maintain health. When we go the other way, when we do all the wrong things and hope that somebody is out there finding a pill to fix us, then we're going in the wrong direction. So I think health education, especially with young children, the social marketing of health maintenance, that is where we start. And then by all means, let's have all the folks doing wonderful research find ways to help us stay healthy.
Dr. Ivan Walks is CEO of Ivan Walks Associates and the former chief health officer of the District of Columbia. He joined us from NPR's Washington, D.C. headquarters. Nice to talk to you, Doc.
Always good to be with you. Take care.